Welcome to ESPN's number one challenge podcast. I'm Billy Gill. I'm joined by Elizabeth E. Liz Fearman, Charlie Chunky Dog Hume, and Charlie Mr. Kravitz. As always, guys, last night was the finale. We have an exciting episode for you guys today. We're joined by newly crowned seven-time champion Johnny Bananas. But first, Season 8, Heavy Metals, Inside the Karoly Gymnastics Empire, is a groundbreaking seven-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bela and Marta Karoly, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA Gymnastics history. Subscribe now to the 30 for 30 feed on Apple Podcasts. The whole season is available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Guys, should we get started and break down this episode?
Let's break it down. This final challenge started the way all final challenge starts, which is all of the challengers lined up and TJ telling you this is going to be the most brutal final ever. And what's significant about this one is he very clearly off the top said that it was going to be $500,000 per person and it was an individual final. And that just made me think, poor Anissa. For weeks they were like, we can't run a final with her. What if it's a team final? And then off the top at the start of that final episode, they're like, no, it's individual. No team aspect to it. It just made me sad that she was eliminated so early.
What'd you guys think of this final before we get too far into it? Because they said it was the most brutal final that we've ever seen. I felt like we had seen more brutal finals in the past.
I think that you have to factor in, and I'll be curious to see what Banana's take is on it. You have to factor in where the final was. So it was in the Austrian Alps, I believe, and it was at a really high elevation. It was literally in the middle of a blizzard. So I think that it's easy to look at it on TV and say like, oh, they really didn't cover a ton of ground or whatever else. But also you have to kind of think, well, it was probably pretty brutal. Like the body output there is much higher than if you're at sea level, if you're in a warmer climate. So I think that in and of itself, and I don't know, I wonder as a producer how you take that into account on the front end where you worry about how it's going to look visually, even if you know it's actually hard.
There's no way that was the hardest final ever. We had one 2 years ago where we had like Georgia passing out on a bike over and over again. And the challenge doctors basically being like, oh no, she's good to continue. And that was like stage one. And then there were puzzles, there were carnival games, there was a second endurance segment.
Didn't Maddie also get eliminated in that one? That was the one that was like a Mad Max themed final, right?
Yeah, that was the one where they had to do 4 4-mile loops and do a puzzle between each loop on the first day.
You know, I was going to lean with Chunky Dog and be like, you know what? It's probably a situation where this just wasn't necessarily TV friendly thing where how do you just show like, hey, they're going through snow and now here they are like, 2 miles later, they're still going through snow. It looks exactly the same. Mr. Krabs has swayed me. I'm back now on the side of this wasn't as difficult as they made it seem.
Help me out, Elis. I had some opening thoughts on the difficulty of this final.
I mean, I feel like I can sit there from the comfort of my own couch and say, they had to carry some stuff and climb some stuff, and it was probably really cold. It would probably suck to sleep outside. But let's be honest. I had my air conditioner going. It was 80-something degrees out. I was very comfortable. I feel like, who am I to judge that? I feel like any of these would be very difficult.
Oh, I'd be absolutely horrible at this. Like, I don't want anyone to get the impression that I think that I'd be able to.
Ditto. I could finish none of these finals.
Here we go.
I'd actually like to jump in here and take the flip side of that, which is that I would have been amazing at this final because I was on the ski team growing up. And boy, I guess that takes us right into the opening part of this final. But wow, they could have used some ski lessons on the front end.
Can we just, before we get to that, I want to betray you just for a second. So when we saw this, I believe the first comment that Charlie said was, how do none of these idiots know how to ski? And then we were all like, I don't think I've ever skied. I don't know that I know how to ski.
There's one skier on this podcast, and it's exactly who you thought it would be. But that brings us to the first stage of the final, which was cross-country skiing up a hill with 3 logs at a time, then downhill skiing down a hill to get 3 more logs until you got 12 logs into your fire pit. You had to light a fire and then hike up a hill. And the winning strategy was basically, because none of these people really knew how to ski, take off your skis and hike the entire time.
I was shocked that they let that happen, that they didn't tell them, like, you need to wear these skis, because they figured out pretty early on, hey, we could just run up the mountain with our boots and then we'll ski down.
And I would have loved to know what the specific rules are there, because that's one of those things we talk about, like maybe once every two or three episodes, where you wish you had the behind the scenes to the 45 minutes they use explaining the rules, because it's like, can you leave your skis? Do you have to carry your skis? Can you put your skis on the ground and stack wood on top of your skis and then push your skis? We didn't know like any of the minutiae of the rules, but yeah, it was pretty funny how they all just bailed on that pretty quickly.
This is a classic. I have no idea, but this is what I assume, that as they went along, they were flailing and falling so much that the producers were just like, yeah, just take your skis off. It's fine. I'm sure it was banned in the initial rules and it was an adaptation as they went along.
That's one of those things that I hate about the finals that we see every single season. And we saw it in this episode also, where they just decided at a certain point, all right, you timed out on this. Just keep moving on to the next one. It's like, whoa, hold on a second. Like, this could build like a pretty big lead if you don't just let the people continue doing it. But there's certain challenges, and it's usually like a puzzle thing where they just tell them like, hey, you know what? You took too long. Just keep going so that you finish this thing.
100%.
And I'm curious, do you think that they made that call before or after Bailey had the moment where she tweaked her knee on the ski?
It's very possible that that was a reaction to Bailey claiming she tore her MCL. Conspiracy alert, she did not tear her ACL.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as that episode progressed, and we're moving away from the first challenge now, but it went from a torn MCL to a sprained MCL to probably the biggest part, the emotional meltdown when she learned that she had to spend part of the night outside, which is really getting ahead in the episode.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of conspiracy theory alerts to be had, and that is certainly one of them, that Bailey did not disqualify herself because of her knee, but rather just, you know, not wanting to sleep outside. Anyway,
spoiler alert.
After they've had their barrels, this is one of the, and lit their barrels on fire and had a bonfire. This is one of the weirdest parts of a final I've ever seen, because it seemed like the majority of the time they spent on day one of this final was totally untimed and almost a team building exercise. It was like, throw competition out the window. We're all going on a hike up to our mountain chalet. We're all going to clip in and we're going to climb the mountain together.
So I have a conspiracy theory on this one as well. And I mean, at this point, I feel like we're really throwing the MTV producers under the bus here. But I think their calculation there, because the last thing TJ tells them before they walk up, they do this little hike up to the where they stayed the night, was there's going to be one more elimination. And the people who won this first sort of challenge are exempt from that elimination. They're going to be part of the tribunal who decides who goes in. So use this time to talk out who's going in. And I was expecting it to be an entire conversation as they were walking up. We didn't get any sort of sound bites from that. And I think what happened there was, they were too winded from walking up the hill doing the hike that they didn't have time to politic. So yeah. I think maybe that was a miscalculation from the producers as well, where they thought, ooh, this could be a good scene. But in reality, it was like, no, we're just trying to make it there alive.
So on the men's side, Corey won the first stage before they decided to do that team building thing. Corey won, Fessy got second, Bananas got third. And then Rogan and Kyle were bringing up the rear on that one. And then on the woman's side, it was Jenny that won. And then she had to decide, her and Corey had to decide, who is it that we're going to throw into this surprise? We have one more elimination of the season.
This is mind-blowing to me. First of all, another tribunal without three people in it. Another dual bunal. But you're in the final with a chance to win $1 million. And Rogan is like, I'll go in. And Melissa is like, I'll go in. It was wild to me that at this point, yeah, they probably would have been voted in anyway. And that was noted by Fessy. But still, don't throw yourself in. Don't give yourself another chance to just give up your shot at $500,000.
Well, that first challenge must have broken Melissa to such a degree that she just knew no matter what was going to happen, she wasn't going to do it. Because I thought that seemed to be a layup on the women's side. Just put Bailey in because she looks like she's hurting and she might bow out anyway. So for Melissa to go in and then subsequently quit and just give Casey a free win, and then at that point, that's when we had another twist, where which is the reason why Bailey bowed out. But I think that, you know, on that side, and then yeah, on the men's side, it seems like it's a bold strategy from Rogan. I kind of love it in some ways, but just to be like, a lot of people really ripped on me last season for just kind of skating to the final, and this season, even though I'm in the final, I'm still going to earn it to show everyone that like I can do these types of things.
The anti Kevin Durant. Anyway, so we ended up with this elimination, which Melissa bowed out, so Casey won the elimination. And so we just had a singular elimination, which was Johnny versus Rogan. And it was essentially a just ringing elimination, which we'll talk about more with Bananas in a bit. But the old man saw some hops and ended up winning.
In terms of how that played out, you know, the elimination itself was a bell on a string above a little, you know, clearing of sorts where it was covered in snow, and you sprint to the middle, and instead of being a hall brawl where you're running through the person to ring a bell on the other side, you're jumping to ring the bell in the middle. And so I was not impressed by either of their first leaps, but it looked like then they had to sort of recalculate, and then Bananas went up and won that first one. But I just thought Bananas, I mean, on size alone, I thought Rogan was going to have a huge advantage of that, and he lost 2-0.
Do you think it was against the rules to tackle the other person? Because I was wondering if you had, instead of like someone goes up for the catch, it's basically a defenseless receiver at that point.
I was wondering how you could have gamed the rules there. Like, what if you jumped up and shielded in the process, ran into your opponent and either missed or hit the bell or whatever, but you made a physical move without making a physical move? I thought maybe that could have been a play.
It seemed like they had a concept for an idea and then kind of just let things play out the way that they played out. And I don't think, obviously, that they were planning for Melissa, who went into the elimination, and then they put Casey up against her, and she basically said, you know what, I'm not going to compete. So Casey gets the free win. I don't think they were planning for that at all. So then, as it is, the women's side had one less person. There was 9 people going for it. They've now lost one. So now there's only 3 women left in the elimination. It's going to be Casey against Melissa. Melissa quits. So it's Casey, an injured Bailey, and Jenny, who won the challenge. And then you have Bananas against Rogan. So you know that that's going to go down to 4 with whoever gets eliminated there. And then we find out after this elimination when Bananas wins. TJ told us before the challenge, play to win. But he didn't tell us why he said play to win. And why did he do that, Mr. Krabs?
Everyone knows one thing about TJ is that he loves winners. Mm. And the winners from this elimination and from stage 1 of the final got to sleep inside in a toasty, snuggly mountain chalet. And
which
the losers
wasn't that nice, but compared to the alternative, was heaven.
It was sort of like some bunk beds in a room, but
yeah.
But because the alternative was the buddy cop comedy that we all want to see.
Buddy cop alert.
Which was Kyle and Fessy, just polar opposites in terms of their, not even their social game, just who they are in the real world. Just sitting out there on these 2 barrels around a little tiny fire. And Kyle hoping to pass the time by maybe getting to know Fessy a little better, asking him questions, making observations about the weather. And all Fessy wants to do is sit in silence and hope that in some way, shape, or form, he's going to get rescued from this cold, be brought inside, wherever else. But he wanted nothing to do with Kyle. And it was hilarious watching the two of them kind of not even go back and forth. It was just Kyle talking to a brick wall.
The reason that it was just the two of them also is because at that point, when Bailey found out, hey, you know what? I didn't win and I need to sleep outside. Oh. My leg hurts a lot more than I thought it was going to hurt. And I'm not going to be able to win this thing with an injured leg. And I'm not going to be able to win this thing if I have to sleep outside all night in the cold. So Bailey has now also dropped out. So now we're down to 2 women. So it's going to be between Casey and Jenny for the $500,000. And just as much as TJ likes, you know, surprises and all that, TJ hates quitters. And we essentially had 2 quitters on this challenge. One of which, I think, by the way, Melissa, who we've now found out at the time with child, I think we'll get the benefit of the doubt on this. And definitely. Bailey also left with a medical injury. So I think she may skate by in terms of the quitters. But TJ could not have been happy with the fact that out of the 9 competitors, they lost 4 when they should have only lost 2.
I think TJ needs to be a little bit harder on people faking injuries.
Ooh. So fake injury now.
Yeah, exaggerated injuries.
Over-dramatizing injuries, maybe. Maybe it's not fake. It's just...
That's a better way to put it. That's a more accurate way to put it. But anyway, Billy, this is an interesting point because losing Bailey, I think, affected the way they did the second day of the final. The second day of the final essentially came down to, based on how you did in day 1, you got a 1-minute head start if you're in first place over the second place competitor, and that person got a 1-minute head start over the person in third place. And it was essentially just hiking up a mountain until they got to a series of math problems. They were not complicated. They were just like basic PEMDAS math problems. And so there was no real advantage to it. But the final had to be pared down because if there was any sort of elimination or another puzzle or something where you whittled down the cast more, with only 2 female competitors left, if someone got eliminated, it's just over.
I hate when they do portions of things that are affected by time and performance and when they do things that are not. So you basically had, if you finished in first or if you finished in last for the men, you had like a 3-minute head start. When Corey finished maybe like 25 minutes on the first leg faster than whoever finished in last place, but he only has then like a 2-minute lead on him. Also, surprise alert, the buddy cops didn't finish the night outside. After being miserable for 6 hours and Kyle just talking off Fessy's ear, they were allowed to go back inside.
My big question is, I want to know how much time they then got to spend inside. Was it like, yeah, you got 90 minutes to warm up, or now have 6 more hours to sleep restfully in a warm environment? I'm curious about that.
Whatever it was, it clearly took some sort of toll on Fessy. And again, this was part of the weird sort of accordion effect that you felt like the way that the second day of the final played out, because it was so odd. Corey gets a head start. You're thinking, ooh, that could prove to be the thing that pushes him over the top. He gets to the math section and he's got no chance. And all of a sudden, Fessy's surging ahead. You think Fessy's got this thing won. And then Corey ended up passing Fessy and finishing ahead of him. Like, you know, so it was tough for me to understand how much time lapsed between each of these sort of things, but it seemed like the only real thing that you needed was stamina. You didn't really even need to be that good at math. The head start didn't really matter that much. It was like, as long as you paced yourself properly, you had a good chance, and the eventual champion did do that.
It was hands down the most surprising part of the final that Fessy was all brains and no brawn. The guy could solve the math, but could not make it up a mountain. The dude talked all season about how, you know, top 30 tight end, NFL hopeful. I'm not just bigger than everyone. I run better than everyone. You ran worse than Kyle.
Wow. By the way, quick plug. If you want any of Fessy's gear from that memorable season or memorable final run, he has it out there on eBay. And we're trying to convince Chunky Dog that it's a good idea for him to buy it all so that he could wear it, even though Fessy's probably like 2 sizes too big for him.
I'm thinking about buying it, maybe getting it tailored. I only saw the long sleeve shirt and a pair of shorts on there.
Oh no.
If we could track
there's
down
like
a helmet.
There's like a parka.
Yeah.
There's like the outdoor jacket.
Okay. Yeah.
There's the outdoor gloves, compression shorts, compression shorts.
Yeah. The short sleeve shirt. I mean, that one, it says specifically, I think, was used in every single challenge. And then if you look at the notes on the jacket for the final, it says very rare. So
maybe when we debut our TYB segment, whenever we do that, that I'll show up in full regalia. So I am an honorary member of TYB. But yeah, I mean, I think like Fessy, just to take it back to Fessy, like I think guy had a pretty amazing debut season to make a final. I realized why he didn't throw himself in when he already had his red skull, but really would have loved to see him in the hall brawl. And I worry that we're not going to see very many hall brawls anymore. So I fear he might have missed his last chance to have an iconic hall brawl. But I would love to have, you know, like in basketball when they wear the little things around their heart, the sport VU sort of data, and they can track their output and they can, you know, figure out, hey, when did they hit their maximum level output? I think if you would have looked at some data for Fessy, he would have just run out of energy like right after finishing the math problem in the final. And that's a terrible place for that to happen to you.
Certainly is. Can't think of a worse place when you have to climb up a mountain for the next hour and a half after that. And the climb after the math problem was sort of anticlimactic for a couple of reasons. One, because Bananas sort of ran away with it from the guys. And two, because Casey timed out on the math problem. So Jenny had, I don't know, a 30-minute lead. And so it was never really a competition. And Casey had a good attitude about it. But Jenny and Bananas just ran away with it. And to the point that when they finished the final and they saw TJ with, I don't know, a red surfboard that they had to touch. I'm not sure exactly what that relic was at the top of the mountain.
I think it was a red skull.
It looked like a surfboard from behind. When they touched their red skull surfboard, Bananas actually asked TJ, is it over? Are we done? Because I think he was even surprised that there wasn't a puzzle and that the most grueling final in challenge history wasn't even a little bit more grueling.
I think also definitely worth noting, Jenny finished first overall. That was really impressive. I think Jenny, after we kind of dogged her at the beginning of the season for the failures against Tori in last season's Hall Brawl and maybe having some popcorn muscles and eliminating a very early competitor in Jen, showed up in a big way toward the end of the season, winning the Hall Brawl against D and then winning the final, finishing first overall. And then Bananas, who we'll talk to shortly, wins his 7th title. And so, I mean, I think we can get into some of the legacy stuff there, but I think that's kind of cements him as the GOAT, does it not?
I mean, count the rings. Rings plus minus.
It was really surprising, I think, how emotional he was. Because you know that this means a lot to him, but the fact that he broke down in tears, kind of explaining how much it meant to him. Oh, here we go. I feel like Mr. Krabs is going to say that was just for TV.
No, I mean, look, when you pass Michael Jordan in rings, you're going to cry.
That's true. That's true. So should we talk to Bananas?
Let's talk to Bananas. We are now joined by the first 2-time guest in the history of ESPN's #1 challenge podcast. And the last time we had this guest on, we had a bit of a Schrodinger's cat scenario where this person was, he was introduced as a six-time challenge champion, but he was in reality a seven-time challenge champion. So, Bananas, first of all, great to have you back. And second of all, how hard was it to walk around as a seven-time challenge champ while everyone was calling you a six-time challenge champ?
Listen, man, it wasn't too bad. I knew, you know, it was just like keeping a secret, man. It's like, leaving a present under the Christmas tree, you know what's inside of it, but they don't. And then getting to see like the shock and the awe and the joy on their face, you know, that's what's going to be great about this finale. Is it's going to be everyone now experiencing what I've already known was there and just getting to see their reaction. And I think it's going to be pretty cool, man. I'm really excited.
So, Johnny, for a couple of years, you're right along with Jordan, Brady, Kareem. Now, I think it's fair to say you've shown the world you're above all of them athletically.
I could not agree more. You know what? Your word's not mine, my friend. But, yeah, I mean, listen. And I know this is going to be the unpopular opinion, but what I've had to do, a lot of people are like, oh, come on, man, you're not a professional athlete. Well, I'd be willing to argue that the training and the endurance and the mental fortitude that it takes in order to not just show up on the challenge, but to compete there is up there with what a lot of professional athletes have to put themselves through. But in addition to that, and what I've always said, the reason the challenge is so difficult and the reason why it should be considered a sport is because we don't know what we're doing. You take the best football player, the best baseball player, the best basketball player, the X's and the O's never change, all right? It's always the same game. And even though you're playing a new opponent, you know what you need to do. Hit the ball, catch the ball, throw the ball, run across the end zone with the ball, sink the ball, whatever. With us, it's like, what are we doing today, TJ? Well, we don't know until we show up. It could be you're doing trivia, you're dangling from your balls off the front of a tank. We're letting people shoot tomatoes at you. You have to run head first in a hallway, the Oklahoma drill, which has been outlawed by college football, but we're still doing it. So I think that's what it is. And it's the ability to succeed and only getting one shot, might I add. You get one shot. You do a challenge, you have one shot to do it. You've never done it before, and you get one time to do it. And this could either mean the difference between you winning and seeing another day or you having to run headfirst in a hallway into Rogan. So, the fact that I've, been able to compete for as long as I have on the challenge at such a high level with the amount of adversity that I've had to face, the amount of pressure, the longevity. I mean, I've had a 15-year career, 20 seasons doing this. It's nothing to poo-poo about. So, there's always going to be naysayers out there that want to discredit the challenge and what we do. And it's a reality show and it's, whatever. It's in my opinion, the greatest show on earth. And I'm just glad that everyone got a chance to witness me bring home yet another victory.
Absolutely a professional sport. And as an athlete, we got to see you last night be emotional. And we've seen you win a lot of these seven now.
Yeah.
And that reaction was different.
Yeah.
And I've seen that reaction with a lot of great athletes. You've seen Jordan cry with the trophy. You saw it a little bit different last time Tom Brady won. And the question I have for you is that a sign that you might walk away like Jordan after his final title? Or how much career do you have left?
So the tears – That was the culmination of not just 8 weeks of being in a bunker and just having to deal with the mental, physical, emotional rigors that this season held. That was six seasons of, just pain and anguish and, self-doubt that started to accumulate. And I think that was that all just the levee breaking. And all of this that had piled up that was me having this realization, this moment that I did it. And, against all odds, too. I mean, I'd be lying sitting here in front of you guys if I said that I thought that, I was going to win that season going into it, even going to the final. I was like, something's going to happen. I've been so close so many times. since that sixth victory that I just was starting to doubt that it was ever going to happen again. And I think it was the realization that it had happened. And even when I, you know, a big part of me thought that it wouldn't, you know, a lot of that doubt ended up creeping in. And as far as retirement goes, man, I mean, I feel like I'm playing with house money at this point. All right. I feel like going into this season, it was like I had so much that I had to prove. I had to prove that I was still able to do it. I had to prove to these new cast members and old cast members that I still had what it take, and I was still, you know, someone to take pause when they show up. But also it was to prove that this curses don't exist and that they're made to be broken. And while I didn't necessarily think I was cursed, I know there's a lot of people out there, a lot of naysayers, a lot of conspiracy theorists that wanted to believe that this curse was real. And I think, you know, being able to prove to them and to myself that, you know, it very much wasn't, and that I still have what it takes to compete at a high level meant a lot. And going out, I mean, listen, if anything, what this season proved to me is that I still have more than enough than what it takes to compete at this level. And now I feel like I'm going to be even a more dangerous competitor than I was before, because there's no pressure on me anymore. Going forward, if I never win again, I am totally fine with that. Because I won the one that I needed to win. And that was my seventh. That was this one where there was supposedly a curse. What's going to happen now? I don't care. You could curse me. You could cast a spell on me. It doesn't matter at this point. I just want to now show up and, you know, ride off into my the twilight years, just making good television, stirring pots, and competing.
You obviously, as you mentioned, this is not your first rodeo going to a final. You've seen options where you've traipsed through the jungle and the desert. And how did this rank both in terms of difficulty, and just because I'm wondering, is it harder to run a final like when it's incredibly hot or freezing cold like that?
I would say that there's nothing like competing in the cold, okay? And at altitude. So if you're in a jungle, okay, great. It's hot and it sucks, but I think your body is just better at competing when it is warm and when it is hot and when you're at sea level. When you are that high, we were sleeping at close to 11,000 feet. I mean, that's parachute altitude. That's what you jump out of an airplane and pull your parachute at. So not just competing in the cold, not just having to trudge through knee deep snow, which again is miserable, but not being able to breathe. And it's not like we acclimatized. It's not like we had time to get there and be like, all right, guys, you're going to be at altitude here for a week. We're going to let your bodies and your minds and everything adjust. No, no, no. It was, we're going to drive from 9 hours from Prague to the Austrian Alps. You're going to go to bed. You're going to wake up the next morning and you're going to climb and compete on an 11,000 foot mountain. I mean, there's nothing more difficult in my opinion than that. The final obviously isn't necessarily as long mileage wise as one where you run around in circles for a while, but it doesn't need to be. They're both fulfilling the same purpose, which is to beat your ass and to exhaust you. And your body, when you're at that altitude, I don't know if it's essentially dying. It's very slowly, but there's a reason why. I mean, you're tired all the time. You're always hungry because your body is now burning so many more calories and it's struggling to stay alive essentially. So, and then not to mention on top of that, I mean, it was bitter cold. We had to compete in a blizzard. This one was brutal. Of all the high altitude finals that we did, I think this one was the toughest one.
If you had to sleep outside, do you think you still win?
So, and it's funny because this is like the first time that I really thought about this. If you would have given me an option, okay, because I don't know. I honestly don't know. If you would have given me an option and TJ would have said, all right, Bananas, here's your choice. You can either go into elimination tonight and have a 50-50 shot at coming back, but you get to sleep inside. Or you have to sleep outside, but you have 100% chance of staying. I would have taken the sleep outside because in the mindset that I was in, I wouldn't have risked it. And you know, physically and mentally, I just felt like, listen, we're all going to be shot equally here. You know, it's just about having, you know, I think what I have on my side, and I think a lot of people know this, is the experience. And even though I have never slept on a mountain in the Austrian Alps before, I have done similar things and I know how my body reacts to certain things. And, I mean, it sucked. Trust me, for Fessy and Kyle, that definitely sucked. I mean, but at the same time, that's how finals go, man. You never know. I mean, they also got to not have to compete in an elimination together. So that's why you got to take the good with the bad.
So we saw you this year kind of team up with Wes, which we never thought we would see. We saw you kind of be friendly with Nelson and Corey, who you've always pitted against each other, basically, because you'd outsmart them and have them eliminate each other. We also, from talking to the other castmates, have seen this was a totally different experience than any other season. It wasn't like the lavish house. It Yep. wasn't like the partying. It was kind of like an experience that you all shared. So I'm wondering if the cast in general now moving forward in the seasons that are to come, is this something that you're going to see the people that did it with you differently and maybe change the way you play because you also have the weight of winning a seventh title off, or you're just going to go back to being bananas?
So, I mean, this was a different experience. I mean, this is the first time ever on a challenge. I mean, part of it obviously was the format where you didn't have to be as cutthroat this season because the challenge was going into an elimination, not staying out. The ultimate challenge, though, this season, our ultimate enemy, and this was with everyone, was that bunker. We were all in it together. This bunker treated everyone the same. It didn't play favorites. There wasn't certain people it was easier on than others. I mean, that was a nightmare. It was an absolute 8-week-long living nightmare. And I think because of what we were subjected to mentally and emotionally, it was like it broke every single person, including myself. And I consider myself a very strong-minded person. But I'd be lying if I said that going in, I mean, even after the West elimination, even after I had my red skull and I had a purpose to be there, it was miserable, man. And I think in a strange way, whereas a lot of times the challenge in the house and the environment, the challenge is meant to drive you apart. I think in a strange way, like this bunker had the exact opposite effect and it brought a lot of us together. Mm. I mean, I'm still in a chat group with now I can say it because we're in the final, the Gnarly Nine, which is the final, the nine finalists. We all went into that final almost as like this like weird, like oddly bonded like family where we still are in contact and we're still talking because like they say, when you have very incredibly emotionally traumatic experiences, it really does bring people closer together. As far as moving forward is concerned, I mean, who's to say? You know, I don't know what the future seasons are going to hold. And, you know, I know that I'm not going to be currying any favors from anybody. It's not like I'm going to go and it's going to be like, oh, you know what? Bananas, that was really cool in the bunker with him. Let's take it easy on him this season. I'm under no illusion that my life is not going to get any easier from here on out. It doesn't matter what I do. But if anything, I just made my life even more difficult than it already was. And I'm okay with that. I resigned to that fact. I know that nobody on earth, including my mother, is ever going to root for me to win another final. And I'm okay with that. Like I said before, at this point, I'm playing with house money. So
Bananas, you've been great to spend the time with us. We have one last thing for you, and we're going to let you run. So everyone knows the best part about winning a championship is the merch, right? You get the shirts, you get the hats, you get all the fanfare that comes with it, right? Yeah. Everyone knows that. It has to be true. So you had an iconic moment last night where you were thrown into this one last elimination against Rogan. And I just want to take a look at something. Tell me, how do you feel about this action, right? So this is for the listening audience, what we have here is we have an image of the bell, which Bananas rang, and he's got a little helmet with a banana on it and says, just ring it. And I feel like we could do some numbers on this.
That is sick. I actually like that a lot, man. But you know what? Can we make my hand a little bit closer to the bell?
Because right
there, there's no way I'm hitting that.
Oh, well, it depends on the angle of approach. I you know, we could definitely Photoshop it. It's you. This is your merchandise, right?
I can
do that. I just feel like it's just ring it, right?
I love it, dude. And you know what? We can have the banana under like the Nike instead of like the Nike swoosh.
Ooh, you just made this an elevated.
That's amazing. Okay, well, now I've got a little work to do on this end.
It's happening.
Get right back to you with it. We'll crank these bad boys out.
Listen, and speaking of this elimination, right? Here's the, and like we were talking about it before. As much as it's like, oh man, that wasn't much. That was tough, dude. Like after what we did for that entire day to then go in, and the angle of approach again had to be completely different because originally when I did this elimination, I jumped. I'm running. It's like, okay, I could make this. Like this is only maybe, I don't know, 7 feet off the ground. I can jump from 5 feet away and ring it. You jump and you just sink straight in the snow. So it was all about then having to like try and figure out like this was a this elimination was a lot tougher and a lot more technical than it looked. So
Well, you were amazing in that. Won two in a row to beat Rogan, who looked to have a size advantage on. You were amazing the whole final, and you are the 7-time champ. So, Bananas, thank you for joining us once again. Congrats
Thanks
to you.
Thanks for having
and,
me. I appreciate
you know, hope
it.
Hope you celebrating another one on a challenge season in the future.
Yeah, likewise, man. I wouldn't hold my breath on that one, okay? like I said, I'm just going to enjoy this one, dude. This one meant a lot. Out of all the wins that I've had, this was hands down, this one meant the most to me. And I think if there was ever any argument before or any disagreement of who the GOAT was, I think we could put all those all that speculation to bed now because he's sitting right here in front of you.
You heard it here. He's the GOAT. Appreciate your time, Bananas.
Love you guys. Thank you.
I feel like you and Bananas are going to be business partners, Chunky Dog. Like, I feel like he's actually going to sell your logo stuff that you created for him. Now, I don't know that you're going to get cut of that. I hope that you're okay with that. But I feel like, I don't know that he necessarily loves us the way that he says he loves us, but I feel like he loved the image that you made for him.
Yeah, this is one of those rare occasions where I'm 100% fine giving away my intellectual property for free because it's out of the goodness of my heart. Maybe it's because I want to avoid a massive lawsuit from Nike. But whatever the case may be, I hope he takes that and runs with it and uses it to celebrate his 7th challenge win.
Is it too late for you to maybe like hide in there like a secret like subliminal image of yourself? Like maybe have like Chunky Dog secretly in there somewhere or just like your
watermark?
Ooh, yeah, like not necessarily like an overt watermark, but like maybe like on the outline or something in the banana. If you like zoom all the way in, it's like at Charlie Hume in there, like just in black and it looks like it's a line.
Yeah, let me do a little work on that. Get back to you, Billy.
All right. Elis, you have a recipe for us this week?
I do. And I was going to do something that was, for obvious reasons, banana themed. But you know what? I've already done a banana recipe. I'm going an unexpected route. This is not a pretty dish, much like the final was not a pretty final. But it's delicious. It's wonderful. So this is kind of carrying the theme of the final episode. It's not pretty, but it's great. And it is cheeseburger casserole.
Ooh.
So we're going to start off by preheating our oven to 350 degrees.
Jenny's favorite meal.
Yeah, it's very British. Cheeseburgers. Oh, no, not at all. So we're going to boil a cup and a half of pasta. I used rotini. I feel like elbows would be good, maybe some bow ties, but boil some pasta and cook it until it's al dente. You don't want to overcook it because it's going to bake for a little bit after this. While the pasta is cooking, you are going to chop up a medium onion, saute it, and then you're going to add a pound of lean ground beef to the pan, and you're going to brown that, season it with salt and pepper, and then brown it till it's cooked through. Here's where the flavor comes in. This is why it's a cheeseburger casserole. You're going to add 2 tablespoons of yellow mustard, 3 tablespoons of ketchup, and a couple of cloves of minced garlic. And you're going to stir it and let it all simmer together for a few minutes, really get those cheeseburger flavors going. Then you're going to add like a 28-ounce can. I think that's the size of crushed tomatoes. Toss in the cooked pasta. Mix it all together, let it simmer again for another 5 minutes or so. While that's simmering, you're going to spray a casserole dish, preferably 9x13, with some nonstick spray. Dump the contents of your skillet into the dish. Top it with your favorite shredded cheese. I always go with cheddar on a cheeseburger. And then you're going to pop it in the oven for like 15 to 20 minutes. Just want the cheese to be fully melted, but everything's already cooked. And here is the best part to really solidify it as a cheeseburger casserole. You sprinkle it with sesame seeds, so it tastes like the top of a hamburger bun. And then this, I might get an eye roll, but then when you're ready to serve it, you sprinkle it with chopped pickles on the top. You keep them cold. Charlie Kravitz, I feel
love
like you're
pickles.
Supportive.
Okay, good. Love pickles. They're amazing.
I have an idea for you because I think we can brand this for Jenny if we call it a beef Wellington casserole.
Wow.
I've never had beef Wellington. Is that the one that's wrapped up in dough?
Yeah. I think it's just a British cheeseburger. Isn't that right?
I think it's like a prime rib cooked in puff pastry.
So it's like, I think like mushrooms and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, so keep the pickles cold, nice, crunchy, fresh, refreshing topping. And that is cheeseburger casserole. Does not photograph well, is not pretty, but much like this final, not pretty, very rewarding to eat.
Sounds delicious. Sounds quite delicious.
It's amazing. So tasty.
Classically British dish, right, Charlie?
Yeah,
goes out to Jenny.
A classic beef Wellington casserole, just about as British as it gets. Everyone knows that's what you have in Great Britain every year on the holidays that great British people celebrate.
Not the 4th of July.
Yeah, not that.
A beef Wellington is an English pie made of filet steak coated with pâté. I don't know what that word is.
I think that's a duck liver, right?
It's wrapped in parma ham and puff pastry, then baked.
Well,
I thought
so
there
was,
like mushrooms in there.
That's not at all what I thought it was. So,
you know.
So we're not going to call this beef Wellington casserole.
Yeah,
we're
going to call this
cheeseburger casserole. It's really good. It's like a cheeseburger.
Well,
sounds great.
It sounds great. Congrats to Bananas. 7 wins.
Congrats to Jenny.
Congrats to Jenny.
Number one overall finisher this season.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats if you knew what a beef Wellington was before we Googled it. And Eliz, what are your final thoughts?
Work hard, be kind, and pip pip cheerio.